Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this.
It's teaching you to follow a process. It's teaching you that there's consequences if you skip a step. There's a lot of money spent by the industry, and we're talking billions of dollars every year to keep people like us kind of in the dark. Boy, did he get me, because guess what? And about 6 minutes later, I'm calling my parents, hey, I'm joining the Marines.
Trying to sell your home by owner would probably be the dumbest thing you could do.
I was getting above asking price for the homes that I listed. Selling your house is a very personal decision, and a lot of people aren't comfortable talking about it online or on email, things like that. They want a personal call. I welcome that. I love talking to people about what's going on.
What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
You don't learn from your successes. Failure is the best teacher in the world.
Tim, welcome to the Failure's Knowledge Podcast. I just got one question for you. Why Foolproof Visbo?
Wow. Thank you for having me on, Terrell. I really appreciate it. It's basically the product of a long, winding road that I never would have found myself here to begin with, thinking I'd be teaching homeowners how to save tens of thousands of dollars by selling real estate in a non-traditional way. To kind of give you the Cliff's Notes version, what I'm doing today is I'm just basically educating homeowners and letting them know that they have a choice, because I'm a licensed real estate agent, and I think there's a lot of great licensed real estate agents out there. I also think that we have a bit of a reputation problem. You have to be blind to see that, you know, if you look at the trustworthy polls that they run, that real estate agents don't rank very high on that. And, you know, a lot of that reputation has unfortunately been earned by some of the folks who are in our sphere that don't do the right thing. And as a Marine myself, and I know that you're a Marine, we had this thing called policing our own. And what that essentially meant was, look, we're a unit. And if one of us looks bad, the whole unit looks bad. And so it's on us to kind of make sure that that guy who's fallen back, the guy who's not pulling his weight, that he is, you know, he's dealt with. And there's a lot of different ways he did it in the Marines that we don't do today. But, you know, we're not taking people out to the wood line or back behind the woodshed. But, you know, what we do today is we just kind of, I've found the best way to do it is lead by example, educate people, and let them know that, hey, there are the absolute majority of real estate agents out there are on your side. They want to see you do well. And there's a ton of great reasons to use a real estate agent. But there's also some reasons why it might not be the best move for you. And those are the people that I'm interested in really kind of helping see, you know, the truth from the lies. There's a lot of money spent by the industry, and we're talking billions of dollars every year to keep people like us kind of in the dark. You'd be surprised how many people I talk to, homeowners who are successful people. These are folks who are attorneys. They're highly educated folks that are, you know, college professors. They have no idea it's even allowed to sell your home by owner, or that if they try it, they're going to get sued because they're going to screw up the paperwork, or they don't know how to price their house. And when I take, you know, 5-10 minute conversation with them, I say, actually, this is all very well written. There's a blueprint you follow. It's kind of mind blowing to them. So that's what I'm doing today. And there's a long winding road to how I got here. We could talk about that too, if you'd like, but I just want to kind of give you where I'm at right now.
And I appreciate that. One thing that I learned while talking to other Marines who are veterans or just veterans overall is that we gain different perspectives from our experience. And you mentioned how, like, whenever someone's falling back, and you say there's a terminology called policing our own, policing your unit. I forgot all about that.
And what I use, what I typically use is I use the story from boot camp. Whenever you remember when we was about to go on the Reaper or and we're hiking, we're doing walking so much, and then the line starts separating, and then the driller starts to be like, reach back and touch somebody. And then when you reach back and touch somebody, it closes the gap.
Yep.
You're closing the gap for the homeowners because you're educating them that you can sell your house, but this is how you sell it because you have a blueprint. As I was doing research on you, Tim, you have a format behind everything that you do. Content, the way you reach out, the way you follow up, the way you communicate. That format is so important. How do you teach that to homeowners to say, hey, well, it's not overwhelming. These are the steps that you can follow to sell your home by yourself.
You know, it's funny. So one of the things I am is I'm an aviation buff. I flew in the Marines on a C-130. I was an air crew on there. KC-130, sorry guys. And I ended up just falling. I've always been fascinated with it. And the reason I'm talking about that is I ended up getting my pilot's license, just for fun. You know, I'm not like a commercial pilot or anything like that. I don't fly private jets, just, you know, single engine piston driven aircraft. But I made some great friends at the airport, and one guy's a NASA electrical engineer. Probably one of the smartest people in existence, if we're being honest. I mean, the guy's amazing. You can sit down and talk to him about anything. And what's even more amazing is he never lorded it over you. He's just an awesome, great guy. And he never made you feel like he was talking down to you. He would always get down to your level and explain things to you, even though you knew he could give a college level dissertation on whatever it is you're talking about. But he builds airplanes. He's an experimental aircraft builder. And I walked into his shop and there was an airplane that was just in pieces. I mean, and I'm looking at this thing and I think it's going to take somewhere on the order of thousands of man hours to build. And I'm like, Wes, how in the heck are you going to do this? And he gave me one of those famous sort of metaphors. He said, well, how do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time. So any big, huge project, although it seems monumental, if you step back and look at it, when you look at the day-to-day pieces, it actually is very doable. Are you capable of screwing in three screws and tightening four bolts? Sure I am. Well, guess what? You do that enough time, you have an airplane on your hands. So a very simplistic way of explaining the same system. There are a ton of complexities in how to sell a home. And like you said, there's the marketing aspect, there's the outreach, there's the follow-up, there's the legal stuff, there's the photographic stuff, the artistic, there's so much. And my gosh, if you just go to the average bear and you say, hey, I'm going to teach you how to do this monumental task, they're going to freeze like deer in the headlights. But when I explain to them, listen, it's a 7-day launch and I'm going to give you 6 tasks to do every single day. And at the end of those 7 days, you're going to have a home that's beautifully presented, ready to accept offers from any buyer out there. That's kind of mind blowing to folks. They're like, well, how do you do it? And the key is we're eating that elephant one bite at a time. So it's a step-by-step discipline blueprint. And I think a lot of that goes back, gosh, you think back to the early days of the Marine Corps and then throughout every process that you've had to do since then, it's always been step by step. I mean, do you remember in boot camp, they literally taught you how to brush your teeth by the numbers. They taught you how to lace your boots. There's those of us who are like, gosh, why are they teaching us this moronic stuff? Well, it's not moronic. It's teaching you to follow a process. It's teaching you that there's consequences if you skip a step. This, you know, those rules are written in blood. Those are life and death. Now, of course, selling a home isn't life and death, but there can be very real monetary consequences by people who try to sell a home on their own. One of the big popular things that the industry likes to throw around is that 90% of people who attempt to sell their home by owner fail. And what's worse is those who successfully sell by owner. I haven't verify these statistics or just what the National Association of Realtors sends me in my email as a real estate agent. I believe they sell on the order of an average of $55,000 less than their counterparts who are selling with an agent. So, and I'm not denying that. I think that is plausible. Where I take issue is they say that's the end of the story. Well, it's not the end of the story. Nobody goes into the second and third order consequences of what really happened. And what happened is this poor fellow who works a 19-hour job every day, comes home, watches YouTube on his lunch break, and he's trying to figure out how to list his house. Well, of course he's going to fail. He's got 50 different resources, giving them 50 different opinions on how to do a project. And so what I've done is I've basically just cut out all the noise, and I just give this away for free on my YouTube channel. Anybody who follows me on YouTube, you're going to learn how to do this. I also am happy.
What's your YouTube?
It's a Foolproof FISBO on YouTube. So if you go to youtube.com/@ and then Foolproof FISBO. And the way I came up with that name is I designed it around a guy like me where something has to be foolproof in order for me to understand it. Cause you know, I didn't join the Marines because I was hyper intelligent. Okay. So I call it Foolproof. And then FISBO is an acronym for FSBO, for sale by owner. So it's foolprooffisbo.com is my website. But anyway, I give everything away for free on my YouTube channel, my Instagram. And then, you know, I also have a blueprint that people can actually purchase from me as a course, and where we do one-on-one training. But at the end of the day, what matters the most is that I'm giving people the steps to kind of throw those numbers away, because there's no reason in heck that I've been able to find. Having been in this industry, I've not seen any real estate agents pull some magic out of their pocket, right? I've never seen them do something that an average person couldn't do. And it's just the average person has never been given that checklist. They've never been given that sequence, that blueprint to follow. And it's my belief that once enough people have that, we should be able to see those numbers change.
It's interesting that you always refer back to the Marine Corps and how it taught you different lessons. I forgot that they taught, well, by the numbers, they taught us how to brush our teeth, how to shave. And
yep.
Since I'm a African-American male, a black man, I can't shave. But so when we went to the PX, I buy the Neosporin to put on my face. Man, that stuff did not work. But the process behind everything that you're doing, there are steps to follow. I did real estate back in 2020, and I started in real estate wholesaling. Needless to say, I was not that good. I was in there for 18 months, and I did my last podcast with Amy Rivera. She's a top realtor in Pasco County. And she was like, it takes 18 to 24 months for someone to actually get their foot in the door with real estate. I said, well, I'm in that percentage because I definitely failed. But it's understanding that, one, you have to learn how to market yourself. You have to learn how to look at the numbers. The numbers is the most important thing, because if you don't know how to value your home or look at other homes around your home that's similar to yours, you're going to miss out on the opportunity. You just said something that a lot of people miss out on, $55,000 on when they list their home by themselves. I saw a couple of videos or a couple of things that you put out when you said that you have to know your numbers. And this is how you know your numbers. And you start teaching the importance of finding your numbers. You're a sales guy. Why are numbers really important when it comes to selling your home by yourself?
Well, it's because that's the only thing that matters. And this hurts a lot of people's feelings when I tell them this. And for anybody who's known me for enough time, they know I'm the kind of guy who's going to prefer to disappoint you with the truth as opposed to comforting you with a lie. Okay. I never like to tell people what they want to hear unless it's the truth. And then I'm thrilled to, right? I like making people feel good, but I also don't like the long-term harm that comes from people who are in any position of an authority and on a topic that will tell white lies to an audience just to make the audience feel good. So numbers, I will tell you right now, if you have a home for sale and it did not sell, it's because you priced it wrong. I've never seen your home. I've never seen where it is. I haven't seen the photos. I haven't seen the beautiful drone video you took of it. And guess what? I don't care. I can tell you right now, the only thing that matters is the number. And let me give you a quick example of this. Let's do a thought experiment. Let's say that you have the most gorgeous mansion in the entire world, and it's on the ocean, whatever. You take zero photos of it. You do absolutely zero marketing of it, but you kind of throw a whisper campaign out there that you've just lost your mind and you're going to let this thing go for $100. How many people do you think are going to be pounding down your door to give you that $100? I mean, I can't even count. Okay. Now, let's make the alternative. Let's say you have an old shack, and you hire Ansel Adams to come take photos of this thing. You hire the ghost of Ernest Hemingway to write the listing description. You take the most beautiful marketing job, and you put everything you have behind this, and you put this $50 shack on the market for $1 million. How many people are you thinking are going to knock on your door? Zero. What I'm trying to tell you here is everything that we think that we've been told matters doesn't. This is an Amazon culture in 2025. And what I mean by that is when you go on Amazon and you want to buy a new thermos, you want to buy a whatever it is, if I'm looking at a 40-ounce tumbler and I see 15 of them, the first thing I'm looking at is the price. I don't care what color it is. I don't care. They're all identical. I don't care where it's made. I don't care what brand's on it. I'm looking at price. That's how people are conditioned to shop today. So when you're out there and you're shopping for a home, please don't ever delude yourself into thinking that your very cleverly written description or the fact that you have a really nice oak tree in your front yard that your kids love to swing off of is going to make a gnat's bit of difference, because it's not. What matters is your price. Now, don't get me wrong. After we get him in with the price, then there's all kinds of qualitative differences we could talk about. But it starts with a quantity question and then devolves into a quality question. What is the quantity we're asking for this home? Does that pass the sniff test by the market out there? Because here's another cold hard truth I'm gonna lay on people right now is the homeowner doesn't get to decide the price of their house. As much as we'd like to, you don't. The real estate agent who's selling their house doesn't get to decide the price. In fact, the only entity out there that gets to decide the value of your home is the general market of buyers and what they're willing to pay for it. So you might need, when I hear people say, well, I need to clear $300,000. Good. You keep kneading in one hand and doing something else in the other. We'll see what fills up faster, you know? So it doesn't matter what you need. It doesn't matter what you think it's worth. It doesn't matter what you think it is fair. None of that matters, unfortunately. What matters is cold, hard math. How is your home going to compete against the rest of the market? Because people are comparison shopping in 2020, and it's easier than ever. With Zillow, with Redfin, with all these websites, with AI out there now, who's actually able to shop for you, nothing matters other than price. That's the most important thing. So yes, nailing your numbers is number one. And that's what I hit so hard on when I coach people on this stuff, is you have to nail your numbers. After that, the discussion becomes a lot easier.
One thing that I've recently learned, because I'm in school for business management as well, and you spoke about how when you went to, I think his name was Wes, the guy who did the
yes.
the MBA and stuff like
that. Yep, yep.
Russ?
Wes, like Wesley. Yeah.
Wes. Okay. Yep. And I asked my professor, because he has like five different degrees, and I asked him, like, how come you don't like think you're above everyone else that doesn't have your degrees? He was like, well, we're all the same. I might just be more educated, but we're more the same. Mm-hmm. At some point before Tim had the experience and gained the knowledge and gained the knowledge and the expertise and the trial and error, at some point you had to fail. So what was your biggest failure before you actually stepped into your comfort zone of understanding that numbers matter? Well, this is how you follow the process and the format. What was your biggest failure before the success even came?
Which one do you want? I mean, how many weeks do we have on this podcast here for me to list out all my failures? Golly. My biggest problem growing up, I grew up in Metro Detroit, had an incredible family. But my biggest problem was I quit at everything. I just quit. I had no discipline. I had zero understanding of hard work paying off. And it wasn't the fault of my parents both worked insane jobs just to keep me and my sister fed and clothed. And this is not like, it wasn't them that caused us. It's just the environment I grew up in. There wasn't really much to aspire to. So everything to me was just a big joke growing up. And unfortunately, I think a lot of times I still joke about really inappropriate things, but that's just a character flaw. But growing up, I mean, I quit everything. So it's funny. And again, I hate to be a broken record, but I think I don't normally talk about the Marines as much as I do, except because I know you're one. So I know that you get this stuff. I apologize to the audience if you guys don't follow this stuff. But I'll tell you, I went into the Marine Corps expecting to fail because I had failed at everything. I was terrible at football. I'm a big dude. I was 6'3 and 210 pounds in my senior year of high school. I should have crushed it. I was more interested in, you know, drinking beers and chasing girls and smoking. So like all this kind of stuff that you shouldn't be doing, but that's what we did in, you know, 1996 Detroit. That's just how it was. That was what was more important to me. So I actually signed up for the Marines because we, you know, there's no way we could have afforded college. And truthfully, I hated the idea of school. I couldn't stand it. Felt like a prison to me. So there's no way I was going to sign up for that. So like, well, what do you do? Well, you go join the military. In fact, it's kind of a funny story about even how I got in the, I was actually going to go in the Air Force. As I told you, I was a lifelong aviation nut. And this beautiful, lovely lady, Staff Sergeant Herman of the United States Air Force, heart of gold, was so kind, really encouraging, got me, she was my recruiter. And so, you know, just was so sweet. Talked to my parents, formed a relationship with them. Anyway, I go to finally sign, actually, because my parents had to sign for me. I was 17 at the time, so I couldn't sign my own papers. So I went in to sign up for the Air Force to go enlist. And as I was walking up to the recruiting station, you know how they have those joint recruiting stations? You know how they have those with all the services are in one building? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm walking up and I got my varsity leather jacket on, even though all I did was ride the bench in football. I still wore the jacket like such a poser, right? What a dork. So anyway, I'm walking up there. And I see this, and at this point, I'm still not intelligent enough about how the military works to even understand what the different branches were. I mean, this is how out of touch I was. So I see this dude, but I'm like, wow, this guy's built different. Like he's in his, so I'll tell you, he was in his dress blues. Okay. Yeah. And he's sitting outside in Livonia, Michigan, middle of February, cold as hell, smoking a cigarette. And I'm walking in, I'm like, oh, pardon me, sir. I'm trying to get past you. He's blocking the doorway. Staff Sergeant Arthur Mobley, okay, from, I believe it's from Alabama. And if he ever listens to this, thank you, Staff Sergeant Mobley. You changed my life. But he's blocking my way in, and he takes a hit off his cigarette, blows the smoke right in my face. He goes, "Where are you going, boy?" And I said, "Well, I'm signing up for the Air Force." And he said, I'm expecting at this point for him to say something like, "Hey, attaboy, good for you, you know, good to serve your country." Cause that's what everybody tells me, you know, until this point, but you know, you can guess what a Marine says. Takes another drag out the cigarette. And for those of you who have children in the car right now, turn down the sex part. Cause he used a little bit of profanity on me, but he blows that smoke in my face again. And I'm like, good Lord, this guy, he goes, "Air Force, huh? That's funny. You don't look like a to me." Said, but boy, did he get me. Cause guess what? And about 6 minutes later, I'm calling my parents, "Hey, I'm joining the Marines." He had me, because all he had to do was chuck my masculinity as an idiot 17-year-old young man. And he had me. So there I was, joining the Marine Corps. My dad was like, my parents were on board. They're like, "Air Force, cool." I tell my dad I'm joining the Marines. He goes, "What?" So anyway, end up getting a boot camp. And I went there knowing, hey, I'm going to last about 2 weeks. I'm going to wash out. I'm going to go home and get a job. And we'll figure out how life goes. I just went into everything at that point, assuming I was going to quit. That's what I was. Dude, I get to boot camp and all of these dudes are exactly like me. Like in the sense of I'm running just as fast. I'm just as strong. Like everything, I'm just as smart. Like everything I'm doing is actually, I realized, I was like, dude, they're never going to quit on me. Those people, and you remember those drill instructors, they would never, ever quit on you. If you kept putting out effort, they were going to make your life hell, but they were never going to quit on you. That's what I needed. Man, I'm telling you right now, Terrell, they turned me bulletproof. They turned me confident. I became like, over that transition in boot camp, I ended up graduating guide. I was ahead of the platoon. I got to carry our flag across the parade deck. Like me, the guy who quit and failed at everything. They turned me into this freaking bullet chewing monster. I was just like, dude, I could do anything. And I can tell you right now, it literally changed my entire trajectory in my life. And I think that's what gave me the confidence to go out and do crazy things. Like even getting out of the Marine Corps, everybody tells you like, oh, that's a terrible idea. You got a pension. You know, why would you ever leave that? You know, 30 days and insurance. I was like, no, I'm not doing it. Right after I get out, I EAS'd August 18th, 2001. I had a VA exit exam in Balboa Naval Hospital in San Diego. The Navy doc there declared me service connected, which in the old days they called disabled, which was weird because, you know, 2 months ago, I'm doing everything they expected of me, PFTs, you know, doing my job. but now I'm disabled. Well, of course, August 18th, 2001, for you history buffs, 3 weeks later, 9/11 kicks off. It's the real world. And there I am, having just spent 5 years in the Marine Corps training for a job that I never got to do. So when I tried to get back in, I couldn't do it because I had a service connection. So October 01, I signed up at the Federal Air Marshals. I was just looking for payback. And, you know, it was just wild that a 23-year-old kid with zero, I had no college degree, zero experience in the federal government outside of the military. Why would I even try that? And it's just because I believed I could, and I got picked up. So for the next 5 years, I'm flying with them. And it was interesting. And then from that point, I went into the business space. I helped my friends with startups. You know, and along the way, I mean, the failures that I hit, I tell you, one of the failures that I still carry with me to this day is, I hesitate to even call it a failure. I'm a Christian. I believe in God, and I believe that He's kind of written my story, and I'm just living it. So I know that I don't have a lot of control over what happens, but I can tell you, in 2002, six of my friends, they died in Pakistan, in an accident, in a crash. And what was interesting about that is, you know, these were all guys I flew with before. It was an airplane I'd flown hundreds of hours on, you know, there by the grace of God, right? That absolutely could have been me. And for several years after, I truly believe that it should have been me. I felt like I let my guys down because, you know, had I been there, would one of the guys, you know, would Nate Hayes was the flight mechanic on that flight. And that was the seat I would have been in. Would Nate have his family? And everybody likes to kind of have the, I shouldn't say everybody. I often find that when I'm talking about the deceased, I tend to put them on a little bit of a pedestal, right? I tend to be a little bit kinder about them. I don't really focus on all their bad habits. I say that because in this instance, to a man, every single one of those dudes were better men than I was. And I mean that with all my heart. At that time in my life, I was nothing but a drunk, a partier, getting into trouble. That's all I cared about was the next good time. And these guys who died, they had wives, they had children, they had families. And for the longest time, it just, I couldn't understand why, God, why in the world would you take these men away from their families and leave a guy like me on this planet that's contributing nothing? And so that was something I carried with me a long time. And it took me, again, just like all things in life, it took me becoming a father and having a situation where I had to take my daughters full time because, you know, their mother failed them. And I realized, I was like, okay, this is why I'm here. I'm here to be a dad. I'm here to pour every ounce of what used to be guilt over losing my friends into gratitude over the opportunity to be a dad. And in doing that, it really does. Unfortunately, you only get that with the benefit of hindsight. You know, I couldn't tell my 22-year-old self at the time, hey, listen, there's a reason for this. It's terrible that your friends are gone. I know that you'd love them to be here, but that they can't. And there's a reason. And that's probably very little comfort to the family of the men who died. And I still, it breaks my heart when I talk about it, but I'm doing something with that. I'm doing something with that gift that they gave me that. And, you know, ultimately what I would love is for one day when we meet again, for them to say something like, you know what? Good job. You know, how terrible would you feel if your friends made that ultimate sacrifice and what you did with the rest of your life was sit on the couch and eat Cheetos and watch the world go by? You think they'd want to sacrifice for that? No. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that gives me a drive is knowing that I'm going to have to be held to account for the life I lived one day, not only by God, but by also the people who have died for me. And that's a really, really big, it's a big ask if you put your mind around that. And that, I think, helps make me do just the impossible every day that I can.
Wow. Well, I just thought about, we're going to have like a moment of silence for the fallen. So Tim, I appreciate you for sharing that with me. Because one thing that I learned while being on this journey and really discovering yourself is that everything happened for a reason. But the reason that is happening, you will never understand until you get through it. And you mentioned about football. We have similar stories. I was a horrible football player in my 10th and 11th grade year. I'm gonna say my 9th and 10th grade year, my 11th and 12th grade year was completely different because I was placed in a different position. I had a coach. I actually thought about this the other day. His name is Coach Stavely, and he put me into the linebacker position. But at first, I was playing defensive back. It was a bandit. It was like a nickelback. Okay. I was not that good. I was only 5'7", 180 pounds, but I wasn't that fast. Like, you know how you have to backpedal, then turn around and run? Every time I did that, I got beat. I'm like, bro, what am I doing wrong? My coach was like, he say, Humphrey, you a high rep guy. I said, no, I ain't. He said, I just told you, you a high rep guy. And I was like, what does that even mean? It take you a long time to understand what you're doing. I don't know if it's something wrong with you. I don't know if you don't understand what you're doing, but you're a high rep guy. And it's the things that we don't understand that we're getting prepared for, because when I switched to a position I was playing my whole entire life, which is linebacker, it felt comfortable. I felt relieved. I felt different. And now to go into the Marine Corps, yeah, now I have to learn what I'm getting myself into. Mm-hmm. It's not about, yes, it's about serving your country. Absolutely. Moreover, I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm only 5'7", 180 pounds.
Yeah.
I'm not playing college football. Then I tore my ACL. So I was like, I went through the physical therapy, the healing process, but I was like, I'm not about to go through this again. It take me one time to go through an injury, and then I'm done.
Yeah.
So my only way to get out of Little Rock, Arkansas was through the military. And I was going to college for physical therapy. I realized that I don't like science, and I failed biology. I was like, well, I got to figure something out. But every step that you take, every phase that you're going through, you're preparing, you're building yourself today. When we go through the training, the Marine Corps training is like, well, now you got to get on the yellow footprints. Well, what is the yellow footprints? For those of you who don't know what the yellow footprints are, go watch some video. This is where your transformation starts.
Yeah.
Your transformation is consistently happening throughout the 90 days that you're there. And you don't recognize everything that you're doing, but it's constantly building your confidence through everything that you know, the education, the training, the confidence course, the holding the rifle. You mentioned that you don't talk a lot about the Marines, but I'm glad that you are, because you're helping me remember the importance of training. The importance of discovery, the importance of failure. You can't grow if you haven't been through life. But you, Tim, have been through life, and you're experiencing what that failure has turned into. We're going to go off script right now, and we're going to do something. We're going to do a segment, a special segment, to where now you're the expert. You're the expert that's been doing a foolproof FISBO for quite some time. And I come to Tim and I say, hey, Tim, I want to start doing what you're doing. What are three things that I can start doing today that will give me the plan and the blueprint to follow to get just like Tim?
So I appreciate the question, just so I can understand. Are you asking how would you find yourself teaching homeowners, or are you saying how would you actually learn how to sell on your own without an agent? Like
the second one.
Okay, so yes, you're coming to me as a homeowner.
Yes. Yeah,
so great question. So the first thing we would want to do is we would want to see if it's even a good idea, because I'll be the first one to tell you, for a certain set of folks out there, trying to sell your home by owner would probably be the dumbest thing you could do. And I know that sounds crazy, because that's taking money out of my pocket to tell you that. But again, I'm more interested in telling you the truth than comforting with your lies. So let's start with that. If you come to me and you say, hey, Tim, I'm in the middle of a divorce and I work two jobs.
Divorce.
Oh, yeah. Amen. I earned that card. And I got remarried. So I'm me too. I think Marines are slow learners, dude. I think that's what they call us, slow learners. or to put it in a nicer way, high rep individuals. That's what I'm going to start calling. Yeah. I'm not going to tell myself I'm a slow learner. I'm a high rep individual. But anyway, yeah. So the first thing we got to do is find out, is it even a good idea? So my rule of thumb is if you have any legal attachments to the house, so if there's a judgment against your home, if there's a death and it's subject to an estate sale, if it's in probate, if there's a divorce going on, man, hire that real estate agent Give them their commission. They're going to earn that commission because that is legal hell that they're about to go through for you. Do not even mess with that. The other thing I'll tell you is if you got Elon Musk money, you know, and you make it, it would take more out of your day to bend over and pick up a $100 bill than the time it would take to do that. Skip the agent. It's not worth a cardiologist who's making $60,000 a day to spend a week off work prepping his house to save a little bit of money. No, again, this is meant to be additive. And this is, so I'll tell you who this is for. This is for folks like my parents, who love DIY projects. My dad would build a deck in a weekend and my mom would paint murals inside the house just for fun. Like these people are incredible. They're retired. They have time on their hands. They have some equity in the home. This is perfect for folks like that. This is perfect for, a young couple who's trying to figure out, hey, how in the world are we going to start a college fund for our newborn? And, you know, they're trying to scrimp and save every single penny they can. I mean, this on average, this is another $30,000 in your pocket that stays with you instead of paying off agents. So the interesting thing here is there are times where you don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish. You don't want to fixate on the amount of commission you save when it's going to end up holistically costing you more in the end, because you have to take time off of work, or you know, you're going to have to fight your way through a legal morass. There's actually a quiz that I have on my website. It's so if you go to foolprooffismo.com/quiz, it's like a 2-minute quiz. It's in 7 questions. I'm going to tell you whether or not it makes sense for you to even pursue this path. The good news is if it doesn't make sense for you to sell on your own, I still have relationships with real estate agents around the country and who have agreed to take my people on at a discounted rate. So I can still help you save thousands, even if you are going to go the traditional route and sell to a real estate agent. You're just going to be a much smarter, more savvy home seller who's not going to be subject to being just believing everything they're told by the real estate industry.
Okay. So just so I understand what you're saying, we're going to recap. So number one, identify my situation. If I'm going through any legality, any divorce, any probate, anything that has to deal with the legal and law, don't sell it by myself. Just work with the realtor.
That's right.
Okay. The next one, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and the cheat code to all this, take the quiz and you'll find out in 2 minutes. But yes.
Okay. Yep. Step number two, take the quiz.
Yes, sir. That's it.
And then step number three, reach out to Tim if I have any questions.
Yeah, of course. You can actually go to, again, the website, foolprooffismo.com/booking. You can actually book a one-on-one call if you want to talk to me personally. I know a lot of people, you know, selling your house is a very personal decision. And a lot of people aren't comfortable talking about it online or on email, things like that. They want a personal call. I welcome that. I love talking to people about what's going on. And the one thing that you could always know about me is I'm just going to tell you the truth. And it might not be something you love to hear. You might really have your heart set on doing this cool DIY project, but I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to say, don't try it, man. If it's not right for you, unless you want to be one of those 90% who fail or get $55,000 less for their home by just winging it, do not do this unless you have somebody on your side who's teaching you the blueprint and you have the life situation where it's a good move for you.
Foolproof Fizbo. So if you're thinking about selling your home by yourself, just go to the website, take the quiz, do the steps first, because if you try to do the steps out of order, you're going to be all overwhelmed. Tim said, you got to, how do you eat an elephant or break down an elephant? It's one bite at a time. It's one step at a time. It's one process at a time. You mentioned that when you're selling real estate, you got to market yourself. You got to sell yourself. You got to follow up. You got to set up the house. You got to display the pictures. You got to create the pictures or have the photographer take the pictures. Then you have to edit the pictures. Then you have to post the pictures. There's so much work that goes into being successful or being a successful FSBO owner that you don't recognize what you're getting yourself into. When you turn your failure into knowledge, what was the biggest thing that you recognize that you are really doing when you're helping people when you're helping homeowners sell their homes?
Yeah, great question. I'll tell you a story about just narrowly avoiding a failure, but it was really close. I'll take you back to one of the last listing appointments I ever went on. So the whole reason I got into real estate and got my license was because I was trying to invest in real estate. And I was very frustrated that I would do all of the work, I would do all the research, make contact with the home seller only to be told, or actually the home seller's agent, only to be told I had to have an agent representing me, which frustrated me because I came from the startup world now at this point where I've got 20 years of startup experience behind me under my belt. And it's scrappy little startups. It's just me and my friends building these companies from the ground up. And, you know, I'm competing against Fortune 50 companies in their procurement departments bidding on jobs we had absolutely no business competing for. And sometimes we would win. Like, that was the amazing thing is sometimes, you know, not every time, but a lot of times, more times than we thought possible, we would win. So I learned so much about negotiation, so much about relationships in that space that when I tried to bring that to bear on my real estate investment, only to be told I had to go through a gatekeeper, it negated all of that experience I had. So I got frustrated after like the second deal I found, it was awesome. I contracted out with a real estate agent to have them reach out for me. And they screwed that deal up at about 0.2 seconds. It was just awful. And I was like, where did you guys learn to negotiate? This is horrible. So in a peak of frustration, I decided I was going to become a real estate agent. So I took my license in a weekend. It was during COVID. I took the exam remotely. The only thing I had to show up in person for was take my fingerprints and boom, now I'm a real estate agent. And it was awesome. I'll tell you, for anybody who's a real estate investor, consider getting your license because it opened, all of the middlemen were now out of the way. I could see clearly into the exact reality of the situation. And best of all, I was able to negotiate with all of the tools, all of the tactics that I had directly to the person I was trying to affect change upon. So it was great. It's then, of course, as we like to do, we're like, well, how else can I leverage this into something bigger? So I decided I was going to start helping people sell their homes. I became a listing agent. And I tell you, we were kind of laughed at first. Liz and I were partners in that. We were kind of laughed at first by the way that we did things because I'm basically taking my path that I had success with as a small business entrepreneur and bringing it into an industry that really hasn't changed much since the 1960s. I mean, it really is kind of the same thing. And so I remember a lot of the industry veterans looked at me like, yeah, okay, whatever, kid, you know, good. This is going to fall flat. So my average list to sold price ratio when I was a listing agent was about 102.3%. Let me explain what that means. A list to sold price ratio is the price that a house lists at versus what it actually sells at. So if you have a $100,000 home, for easy math, if you had a list to sold price ratio of 90, it sold for $90,000. My list to sold price ratio was 102.3%, which means I was getting above asking price for the homes that I listed. And the reason I was able to do that is because we positioned the homes with scarcity in mind, and we really preyed upon the buyer psychology I'll tell you this, the best way to increase demand on anything is for you to see somebody else want it. And I don't know if you've got kids, but anytime you see a child playing with a toy, every other child in that room wants that toy that the other kids play with. That could have been sitting in the closet for 6 months. But now that that one person has shown it, now they all want it. I got bad news. You did not grow that. We are all the same way as adults. So the best way to increase demand is to increase scarcity. So we would present the homes in a way that really spiked on those consumer psychology touch points. And we would create multiple offer bidding wars on almost all our listings. And here's the best part. The best part was almost all of our listings went under contract in the first weekend. Now, this is in an environment where the average time on market was about 81 days. So all of a sudden, now these industry vets are looking at me like, what's going on? And really all it was I just took everything I knew about the business world, which is hyper-competitive. You cannot sleep and you get into this. And I brought that to the real estate world. And I had some great coaching, by the way, along the way. And, you know, I've probably spent six figures on coaching programs at this point in my life. It's really something I didn't go to college, but I invested in those. And I like to believe it's done me pretty well. But I remember my last getting to the failure part, things were going great. And so again, the next question is, well, so how do I one up this? How do I make this even better? I was at a listing appointment with a really nice guy. He was an engineer, very numbers oriented, straightforward guy. And I thought that he and I were going to hit it off. Right before I got, he was interviewing multiple agents. One of the other agents who interviewed with him did something they call buying the listing. In our industry, buying the listing means you go in there and you say, hey, Terrell, I know that your house is worth $500,000, but because of the way I market, because of the friends I have in the community, I have a rich uncle who's looking to buy it, whatever. I'm going to get you $550 for it. And you think, holy crap, $550? That's another 50. That's great. Okay. So then the next agent who goes in there and tells you what your house is actually worth, which is $500, you already are like, well, I don't like this guy. I don't want to work this agent. Well, I saw that happening before my eyes. I told him his house, what it was worth, and it was dead on. And unfortunately, he fell prey to the agent who bought the listing. And what sucks about that is not only did that house not sell, it ended up selling for less 6 months later than he would have gotten had he just sold. Now, never mind the six months of carrying costs. I don't know, was it $2,000 a month for taxes, insurance, and mortgage on that house? So that's another 12 grand out the window. What about the opportunity costs that he didn't get to invest that money in that he would have otherwise had? That equity, even at the market, let's say he put it in the market at 10% APR, you know, that's another $3,000. So the terrible thing about this is the incentives these days are not aligned between the home seller and the real estate agent, because here's why. The real estate agent, he didn't care. He got to put his billboard in this guy's front yard for 6 months, free rent. He gets to get numbers off those sign calls. He's going to now build his list. His customer list is building up based on that. It doesn't cost him anything to have that sign in the guy's yard. Meanwhile, the homeowner's getting hit every single month that mortgage payment comes in. Twiddling thumbs, wondering why is my house? Well, it's not selling because you listed it at a price that's unrealistic for the market. It's easy to have that conversation with somebody, and of course, in hindsight, he realized it. But at the time, when you're so caught up in the emotion, it's hard to believe that. So it's very easy. Homeowners, when they're going to sell, they're very easy to manipulate, and the reason is it's an emotional decision. I know when I sold my homes, it's either something very happy or very sad is the reason you sell your home. You either got a job opportunity, you have another baby in the family, and you have to upgrade the amount of bedrooms you have. It's a beautiful, fun, emotional thing, or it's a tragedy. Somebody died. You're getting a divorce. You lost your job. You have to downsize. So home sellers very rarely move for convenience. They move because they have to, and it's usually an emotional decision. And unfortunately, I found myself on the way home from that listing appointment asking a really dark question. And it was, I'm tired of losing deals to these agents who are willing to bend the truth. I'm tired of coming in second place when I know I should be in first. If all I have to do is lie to people and make them believe that I can do more for them than is realistically possible, and they end up paying the consequence for that, what do I care? Honestly, I had that discussion with myself, and this was my failure. This was my point where I'm staring over the precipice. And I'm either going to completely dishonor the guys who sacrificed for me, completely dishonor, my God, completely dishonor my family, my reputation, because nobody's going to know. Here's the thing, Terrell. You remember they taught us discipline is what you do when no one's looking, and nobody would have known. I could have very easily just racked up 100 more contracts so easily by just lying to people. Tell them everything they wanted to hear. Yeah, sure, I'll get you more money for your house. Yeah, sure, I'll sell it in 5 days. No problem. Everything under the stars, it's yours. Just sign on the dotted line here. And it made me sick. The thought, how close I had come to that. I mean, it lasted not long, minutes. But what I realized, what I had just agreed to, signing that deal with the devil almost, it made me physically ill. And I know what kind of person I am. I know my limitations, and I know I'm susceptible to temptation. So the best way to keep me out of that is, I think they say it in the Bible, you run from sin. You don't walk away from it, you run from it. And I took myself out of it. I said, I'm done. I cannot trust myself to be tempted with that level of success and continue to do the right thing. Cause I almost didn't. I know four or five more discussions like that, I would have been prevailed upon by the darker side to say, you know what? Yep, let's do it. So I came home and I told Liz and I apologized to her because we were partners in this. And, you know, she's one of the good ones. She doesn't care. She's fighting the good fight every day. She's telling people the truth, even if it costs her business. I'm not as mature as she is. She can take a loss and it doesn't mean everything to her. She goes on and she loves her kids. She loves her family. You know, she goes on with it. Me, when I take a loss, it's painful. I don't like to lose. And that's a character flaw, big time. If I could enjoy that process of losing and growing, because you learn from your failure. You don't learn from your success. You learn from your failures. And so I walked away from that. I explained it to her and you know, she's doing great now. She's, she's carrying down her path and I'm carrying down mine. It's a complementary path in the sense, because now I'm just helping people, but I have no incentive anymore to tell people what they want to hear. I have no more temptation to be dishonest because there's no benefit to me to be dishonest with them. And that's, you know, so much of life is incentives. And by taking away those incentives to make me do the wrong thing, it's not even a decision that I have to make. So that's kind of what kind of led me here today, is that almost failure, which I do consider it was a temporary failure, but thankfully I was able to correct.
It's interesting because my wife Shanae, if something happened, she can't live. Like, she's thinking about it, she's overthinking it. And I give a prime example. A couple months ago, my YouTube channel got compromised, and I had over 893 podcast episodes, 723 subscribers, and that got deleted.
Oh, and, no.
Yep.
Oh, dude.
Yep. It got deleted. And my wife, Shanae, she was like, "Well, why aren't you bothered by it?" I'm like, "Well, I can't do nothing about it. I asked. I was reaching out to the YouTube. Like, I did the process that I needed to do to see if I can get it back." But she was like, "You're not even bothered by it." I said, "No, I'm not." And when I asked the question about your biggest failure, I did a podcast yesterday. Typically, I ask about what's your biggest failure. So I got the question asked back to me. And I'm like, "Huh, what is my biggest failure?" I didn't even say anything about the YouTube channel because, yeah, yes, that's a lot of work that goes into that. But I brought up when I was growing up and I failed so many different tests, exams, and SATs, the ASVAB. It took me 4 different times to pass a test to get into the Marine Corps. And it took me 4 times to get a decent score on the ACT. The YouTube, yes, that's a lot of work, but that's not my biggest failure. It's more so of everything that I've learned to get to here. You got to understand the YouTube thumbnails, YouTube description, YouTube titles, the YouTube hashtags. That's just with YouTube. But then understanding that everything matters, everything connects, everything represents the video. Because if you don't have the title that represents the thumbnail don't match the description don't match anything that's inside of the video. It's like, well, how do you learn it if you don't go through that? It's not the fact that I failed or they got deleted. Is more so I just learned all this information over the last half a decade. So I'm not starting over from nothing. I'm starting from experience. And when you have the experience, you can really push forward your growth, and your growth comes in a different way. So that was interesting that you shared there, and I do appreciate it. So we got one last segment, and it's called Best for Last. And in this last segment, I asked you 4 questions, and you answer within 30 seconds with a quick response.
Woo, let's do it. I hope there's no math. There's no math, is there?
There's no, 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 no. There's no math. No, 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 no. Even if it was, you'd be okay. All right, so question number 1, what are you grateful for?
The life I have. I mean, I'm so grateful for it. I truly is a life I don't deserve. I've been blessed beyond words. I've got 4 amazing, beautiful girls, and an incredible wife. I mean, even the dog's a girl. I guess I could use some masculinity in this house. I'm so outnumbered. But yeah, this life I've been given, my parents, my family, it's like something that when you've seen the rest of the world and you see how everybody else lives and how the dice could roll out, my gosh, there's absolutely no amount of gratitude that I could possibly express to equal what I feel on the inside.
You just made me think of something. This is a good quote I just thought about. Gratitude is an indication of your blessings. I'm gonna use that. That was good. Yep. Next question. Do you have any regrets?
I do. When I was getting out of the Marine Corps, they were taking sergeants in the Marine Corps, and they were putting them in the Army, making them warrant officers to fly helicopters. And I could have flown Apaches. I'll tell you how brainwashed and stupid I was. I couldn't stomach the thought of wearing an Army uniform, a soldier's uniform. No, man, I'm a Marine. I'm not wearing a soldier's. Are you kidding me? What a moron. Dude, I would have been so cool. I would have been like Airwolf, man. I would have been flying those awesome helicopters. But yeah, that is one thing I do regret.
Everything happened for a reason. Everything.
True.
Next question. What is your biggest takeaway you own Foolproof Fizbo, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. What is your biggest takeaway while owning Foolproof Fizbo?
So I'll tell you, one of the best things that I've learned about this whole process is You have to have a why. You have to have a meaning before why you're doing it. I couldn't have done this 3 years ago. I couldn't have had this. I couldn't have done this before I had that experience in the car on the way home, where I was going to be physically ill, when I realized just how capable of evil I am. I mean, as a Christian man, as somebody who I feel like I'm a good guy, what a joke that is. I am so capable of doing terrible things, dishonest things, that if I didn't have that experience, I wouldn't have so much passion to put into doing something good. So have a why. You got to have a why. If you don't have something that's going to get you up at 4 a.m. and it's going to make you do hard things that nobody else is going to do, then you're just going to be like that meme from Achilles. This is why no one will remember your name. If you're not going to do something that's going to leave a mark, if you want to do something that's going to leave a mark, you have to have a great passionate reason why. And one of the best ways to get passion is to live life, make mistakes, go out there, do things that aren't in your comfort zone. And you're going to find yourself facing who you really are on the inside. And only then, only when you reconcile who you truly are, what you're capable of, both on the high end and the bad end, then you're going to truly figure out what you can do to make a difference.
Wow. You got to have a why, because if you don't have a why, you're just doing things for the fun of it.
That's
last question. What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
So it's a great way of, it's a great way of putting a whole philosophy into a nice, catchphrase. The philosophy is you don't learn. We touched on this before. You don't learn from your successes. Failure is the best teacher in the world. If you look at people who have done incredible things, look at Elon Musk, the guy, you know, you don't compete against NASA. You don't compete against Detroit auto manufacturers. You don't compete against, the billions of the media, all the things he's done, he's gone in there and crushed them all. And one of his best tools is failing. I was watching an interview with him, and I'll tell you, if I was putting millions of my own dollars into a rocket program and one of those rockets blew up, you'd see me over in the corner crying in a puddle of tears. He was happy. He was thrilled. He goes, "Yeah, you don't get it. We pulled so much great data from this rocket failure that it's just one bump in the road." That's inspiring. When I see people risking so much more to fail and learn from it, and then seeing the fruits of their labor, that SpaceX is going to put in 99% of the mass into orbit this year. SpaceX, and this is against all the other countries in the world, SpaceX is going to put 99% of the mass in orbit. That's insane. And how did he get there? By not only anticipating and understanding that he's going to fail along the way, but gleaning value from it. You can't just let failure be a defining moment. If it's a defining moment, that's it. You know, if Rocky Balboa quit the first time he got knocked out, there'd be no Rocky II. There's so many instances where you could come up with where people have failed spectacularly, and it really shows you what you're made of. Do you pick up? Do you dust yourself off? Are you a stubborn ass? Do you get up and you say, "I'm not going to let this define me"? You grit your teeth and you get back into that fight? Or do you ring the bell and you say, "I'm out. That's it. That did me in"? That truly is going to define your life. And we all have that point. We all have that point where we're going to be asked for a little bit too much, but it's my ask to you, in this audience, that you question, you just make darn sure that you're ringing that bell, that you're going to live with that for the rest of your life and know that it took you down, because it doesn't have to.
Wow, man, Tim, that this was great. This was really powerful. How can people learn more about Foolproof Visbo, work with you, and really take the seven question assessment to identify what phase they are in and selling their home?
Absolutely. So you go to foolprooffisbo.com/quiz. That'll tell you if you're even suitable to even attempt this. And actually for your audience, I'm charging for it soon, but I'm going to give it away to your audience for free today. I have an ebook, and it's basically a 7-day launch plan. Again, for your audience, it's going to be free. So if you go to foolprooffisbo.com/ebook, you can download a copy today. I'm going to keep it free for at least probably the next week or so. So they have time to go in there and grab that ebook while they can. And by all means, if there's anything that people need help with, if they're even curious about going on this path, but they need some one-on-one time to talk about it, get time with me at foolprooffisbo.com/booking and book a one-on-one time call on me on the calendar. It'll take 15 minutes. pretty easy to talk to, and we're going to know really quick what's going to make perfect sense for you.
Man, this has been great. For those of you that's listening, Tim's story has been phenomenal. If you haven't taken if you made it to this part, you understood why he's successful. And most importantly, never be afraid to turn your failures to knowledge, because you're always one step, one failure from your growth. Tim, again, thank you for coming on to the Failures Knowledge Podcast. What was your biggest takeaway while being on the podcast?
So I really enjoyed that. It was kind of a spot that we could talk about things that people don't like to talk about. I think we really mischaracterize what failure is. And one of the sad things is in our school systems today is we teach kids that failure is bad. And of course it's not always great. It's not ideal, but there's so much opportunity to learn. So when you treat failure as a one-time event and not a learning experience, yeah, that's bad. And one of the things I love that you really focus on here is you teach people that failure is a growth node. Failure is something that you actually grow from. And if you do this the right way, you learn to not only understand that failure is going to happen, but when it does, there's a lot of value to be driven from it. And so that was, I love that we could talk openly about that. And I didn't have to feel bad. In fact, I was actually quite proud of the failures I made, because it's like the old saying, you know, God bless the broken road that led me here to you. I've been on a broken road, man. And how nice it is to see that it took me to where I am today. Without all those failures, I wouldn't be the man I am today.
And that's the purpose of the podcast, of the episode. The last question is, for someone who's hesitant to come on to the Failures Knowledge Podcast, what is one piece of advice that you can give them?
Well, God, I was hesitant too. I'm 48 years old and I'm just now podcasting. So if that tells you anything about hesitancy, I think that does. What I will say is, the reason you're probably hesitant is because you're doubting yourself, and you have a limiting belief about yourself that maybe your story isn't interesting or your story isn't going to be compelling. I can promise you that there are life lessons in your story that even if you don't want to do this for yourself, you can help other people through understanding how you grew through your failures. And maybe you're going to prevent them from having a similar failure, and you can help them skip all the pain that you went through, but also enjoy the benefits of that failure that you enjoyed. So, you know, it's there was nothing bad about sharing. It's all good. You're helping other people. And if you hesitate about doing this, you know, take a good look inside, figure out what that is, and then just take a chance. You're going to take a chance. And I can almost promise you that you're going to come out of the other side being very grateful that you did. Cause I did it. I'm super grateful. And it's in a way it reveals that, you know, some of these negative feelings that you might have about the times you might have came up short in the past. When you look at it in hindsight with the right frame of reference is what you get here on this podcast. You realize that you gained a whole bunch of knowledge through that failure. And that's such a great gift. So just do it. Get on here.